Episode 25.
I think fixing cars is last. We are a concierge for our community. And when we get that, then we're all things to the neighbors that we're building a community around. Nothing about perfection, but all about dedication and the courage to fail. As a musician, a young musician, you will sound horrible. You will sound terrible. As a young businessman or an entrepreneur, you will eat glass and hate it and fail. And the fact is, it's okay as long as at the end of the day you have courage.
Welcome, aftermarketers. Prepare to learn just one thing from today's episode and take action on your journey to remarkable results. Frank Butkus-Loitz from Desert Car Care out in Chandler, Arizona, near Phoenix, right, Frank?
Yes, sir. We have multitudes of air conditioning, appliancy, and we keep cool, and it's hotter than a mug out here.
Are you ready to share your remarkable results?
I am ready.
Hello, aftermarketers. Carm Capriotto here. Yes, 25 episodes. Wow. Thanks for being involved and stopping by to learn just one thing. Without you, there's no podcast. So continue to spread the word on the great insights provided each week from aftermarket service professionals who've been so willing to share the remarkable results. Now, our guest, Frank Butkus-Loitz of Desert Car Care in Chandler, Arizona, is clearly a vibrant, excitable, and passionate shop owner. He is enthusiastic about unity in the industry and helping his fellow shop owner. He has even given his email address for all to have, and it's in the show notes on the website. This jazz trombone player has a great story from growing up in Harlem to serving in the Persian Gulf as a signalman to where he is today. An interesting journey about dedication and the courage to fail that weaves through selling Kirby vacuums, used cars, and to taking the risk to open his first shop. There's so much packed into this podcast, so get out your mental note taker or pencil and paper and get ready for this rapid-fire interview. Frank is very in tune with social marketing and how to take care of his customer with strong internal processes that ensure his quality workmanship. Prepare for his take on marketing, comebacks, parts quality, community, your brand, his biggest community event, and where he actually sees the industry heading. He brings up the C word. Frank is also the president of the Phoenix chapter of ASA. He uses technology in a big way to connect with his community and customers to spread the love and the world of automotive repair. He reminds all shop owners that you are the authority on repairs in your community, and be sure you are engaged and involved in that with social technology platforms. Buckle up. Here we go.
The biggest thing I see in our industry right now is that the 20 and 25 year guys and gals, they're asking, what is the value in this association? What is the value in that association? And I beg to differ. What is the value in you helping another 3 to 5 year mechanic who's an awesome wrench, but he's struggling. He's struggling with cash flow. He's struggling with marketability of his message.
Right.
And so when I talk to a lot of heavyweights, and they're all, you know, I talk to a lot of people nationally, we are to grow an industry. We can't be on the sidelines. We need to help each other.
Right.
Help each other. And so a lot of what I do is helping my industry. And then, you know, if I was basket weaving right now, I'm going to peddle that passion. And this is what I do. I'm going to peddle my passion in this automotive industry.
I want to ask you why reputation management is so important to you.
You know what I say is peddle your passion first and foremost. Get into your community. Go where your neighbors are at. Speak your message. Don't be someone that you're not. Speak your message. Speak your message. I think we get, there's a couple things going on. We're talking social media. We all want ROI, right? We want ROI.
We sure do.
But we forget about something really, really important, and it's why we opened our businesses. And that's the COI, and that's the cost of ignoring. Get it together. Understand that social media is just another avenue to get where your neighbors are at. And if you can dial that in and promote your message, it's another avenue to promote your business or your brand.
The daily tasks that you do that bring the most value to the business?
The first thing that I do, like any other business, is I'm going to check my health indicators. We're going to get technical about the health of the business. I'm not running by the seat of my pants. I'm checking the health indicators to my business, which includes my square footage utilization percentage number, as we are always continually growing. That includes my labor and how I'm leading by my labor. That includes my parts margins. That includes my GP. That includes my car count. That includes the very, very important number one thing that I'm going to bring as the main value as to why I'm here is how people are finding us, the marketability of our company. Now, I've got about 72 to 75% of a loyalty base. That's my repeat. They come in. But my 22 to 25%, they're going to shake up a little bit. They may have moved. Hey, let's get real. They may have tried somebody else out. Maybe that visit, we were not providing the stellar experience. So my goal every day is to look for that.
Where are you getting the new customers, and about how many a day are that are coming in?
So here we go. Santan Sun News. I have a full article, My Face, and it says, treat your first visit with a mechanic like you would your first daughter's date. Respectful, courteous, honest. I tie that into a charitable. I'm very big in my community with the charitable. So I may tie in because I'm asking for that type of demo. Let's back up for a minute. A lot of us throw darts in marketing. We just throw them up in the air and we try this and we try that. And this guy said this. Marketing is a three-legged stool. Medium, message, and market. I want to identify the market that I'm after. Am I going to do that with a $9 Happy Wednesday, it's Ladies Day condescending coupon? No. Am I going to do that messaging it through the funnel of 100,000 coupons? Maybe, but it depends on what my message is. So market, message, medium, that is the vitality for a business. Otherwise, you are playing the penny slots of a casino.
So does message, media, and marketing help you find your perfect customer?
Absolutely. It's not a perfect situation, but it helps me narrow it down. If I'm to troil the seas of darkness in terms of car count, we've all been there, where I may have been going through a month year over year that looks horrible, and we start tearing down the metrics and we say, wow, I'm just not getting that quality car. Now, this is a process. This is branding. This branding doesn't happen overnight. When somebody told me about branding many years ago, I said, listen, man, I'm not Coca-Cola. I don't have the budget to brand. And that's the difficulty for a lot of shop owners. We want instant. We want to put the fish hooks in the ocean. We'll catch a bunch of fish, and we're hopeful that we get the heavy 100-pounders and 200-pounders. That's a tough way to go.
Hey, what made you dip your toe into the world of being a businessman in the service sector?
Do you really want to know, Carm? Here we go.
Okay, because you were a trombonist, and I've known about that. So you went from music and fighting the war to automotive. Give me a two-minute background.
Okay, so, you know, I grew up in New York City in Harlem in a drug-infested heroin neighborhood where I saw politicians on one corner toot for me, vote for me, and across the street heroin addicts were shooting up in their veins in public. This was 1970s in New York City. It was a very dark place. My mother, I came from a single-mom environment. My mother was an immigrant, and one thing my mother did is she kept us structured. We didn't have anything. We grew up in the ghetto. It was hard. It wasn't easy. I started playing music like every other white kid in the class, standing tall. All the good-looking kids got the oboes and the violins, and I got the trombone. That was left over. I played that trombone like any other kid in school. Showed up, played it. And then one year I got a scholarship to the Hebrew School of the Arts. And then the second year I got a scholarship to the Hebrew School of the Arts in Lincoln Center. And I realized these kids were coming from Russia. They were 7 years old in Israel. And I said, this tall, lanky kid with a trombone needs to get some dedication. And that's when things changed for me. So I fast forward with the music and studied with many people and played with many professionals, Carnegie Hall and Avery Fisher and the likes of Tito Puente and Dizzy Gillespie. That was my life. Music and art. I prepared a three-piece movement to get into music and art, the Fame School. And I got in. And I found out later that folks were playing Mary Had a Little Lamb.
Okay.
The fact is, I knew at a young, early age, nothing about perfection, but all about dedication and the courage to fail. As a musician, a young musician, you will sound horrible. You will sound terrible. As a young businessman or an entrepreneur, you will eat glass and hate it and fail. And the fact is, it's okay as long as at the end of the day you have courage. I went to audition for colleges. They all said, hey, we'll take you on, but your math sucks. You need to work on your math. I did a little Borough Manhattan Community College. Didn't like it, right by the World Trade Center. And I took a hard left, and I put my horn down, and I joined the Navy. And they all wanted me to march in the band, and I didn't want to do that. I spent my time in the Persian Gulf in the mid to late 80s, did a world tour as a signalman. I dealt with Morse code, semaphore, classic World War II Navy, if you will, and an old tank landing ship.
Okay.
Fast forward getting out in Coronado. I figured I'm going to rent me an apartment as a young 20-something and finding out that those apartments were $3 million condos. California was the place to be, but if you were out of the military and didn't have a gig or a job, not going to happen. I met my wife at the time. We moved to Arizona. I met her father. Her father was an old A&P mechanic from Lebanon, Middle East, and he owned a few garages. He wasn't high-tech. He wasn't savvy. And I was pulling engines in 1990, hating it. I said, this is ridiculous. My nails are greasy. My hands are greasy. Fast forward, didn't really care for it. In the interim, always did something or another, selling Kirby machines and used cars and whatever it was. And I took on a gig with Lou Grubb Chevrolet here in Arizona. It was a Chevrolet dealership. The evening of my honeymoon, I knew two things. I needed to get out of the family business that my father-in-law had. And I needed to get something structured with training. And that's where things changed for me. And I got a gig with Lou Grubb Chevrolet on the eve of my honeymoon. And I started there as a used car reconditioning, not a PDI. So I did some mechanical work and took as much training that I could with GM, but always kept my used car skills so I wasn't set on GM and came up as a wrench. Fast forward, AutoNation came into the scene, bought out the company. They said, Frank, we're going to transfer you to another dealership. I towed my toolbox. I got to that dealership. They looked at me. Who are you? And I looked at them. I'm the guy they transferred from the Chevrolet store. And they said, sorry, we don't have anything for you. You take a 6'2" man with a lot of passion, you put him on the street, and he starts crying. And that's what I did. I teared up. I cried. I felt beaten. I went home. I had bills to pay. I had a young child, and I took to my wife. And my wife was in business. She was selling clothing. That's another story. But she always had a knack for business. And she said, you know, Frank, we got $6,000. Let's open our first shop. Let's do it. Let's go as far as we can go. If we fail at that, then we move on, and we know we've tried. And in 1995, I opened my first shop, a two-bay with an old busted Svenhoy screw lift that always locked up, a fishing box for tools, and I started my journey in this business in a very rough neighborhood. Most guys would have left it, and I'll leave it at that. I can go on and on, and I just kind of grew that. I sold that business in 2002, 2003, and I was very fortunate. It almost seemed like, and I feel this way, Carm, and for a lot of our listeners out there, there's a lot of pain. There's pain.
There is.
But we got to get through it. And if you can get through it, trust that every day is a new day. Whatever business you're peddling, if you just show up the next day, that is your start. And I was blessed here from a lot of hard work and courage to open up the Desert Car Care Service Centers. I started with one store, a lot different, you know, a lot more rent. And my wife and I looked at each other, and we went from $2,000 a month to, you know, $8,000, $9,000 rent, lease. And I looked at her and I said, okay, it's money. Let's do it.
You got to figure out how to cover it.
Yes. And that was before my days with the great training. You know, I'm a big bottom line impact group, R.L. O'Connor. You know,
sure.
The way I understood it, like a lot of younger guys, a lot of passionate wrenches. Or, you know, let's get out of our industry and look at cooks. Cooks have the same thing. Man, they can cook up a kitchen. The minute they open a business, it's rough. And I didn't have any of that. I just knew that I could. I'm going to price my labor to be what was the cheapest in the neighborhood. I had 100 cars in front of my shop, working 18 hours a day, losing money.
Okay. So when you opened your place, how would you evaluate who you were at the time, a really good tech or a really good businessman?
I was really more on the business side after coming 6-7 years with my first shop. I had sort of stopped wrenching. You know, the first 5 years in the first shop, I was wrenching. I was, you know, answering calls. It was really a one-man show.
Sure.
You know, and so opening Desert Car Care, there was more of an understanding, more of a dialing in to the people, and not so much in the back shop.
Let's talk about culture. You understand that culture is made up of internal employee behaviors that directly affect your customer's view of your company. And I've read a bunch about you, Frank, and it seems like culture is one of the biggest and most important things to you. And here I am, a guy who's going to interview for a job. I'm sitting across from you, and I'm going to come to work for you. What are you looking at in me to join and connect to the culture that you have inside your company?
You know, courage, we go back to that. You cannot fail and not have the ability to have that courage. So if you're walking in for a job interview, and I'll tell you what I hire on, it's old school, it's old fashioned. And I'll give you an example. I had a youngster who's going to school. A lot of us have GSs that are younger. They may be studying engineering. Of course, we're going to convince him that he'll have a better career as a mechanic. And he's been with me for some time. That young gentleman, do you know what he did? He came in every day. And he came in respectable. He came up dressed for the interview. He talked straight. He looked at you. He shaked your hand. That's an interview. That is a man that identifies culture. That's a man, and I say this for the women out there. I don't want to be biased here, but the fact is, the first thing on an interview, I don't want to look at your resume. I want to talk to you.
Right.
I want to look at you, and I want to see the consistency. And that man came in, and there were other, you know, quite frankly, there were other more qualified individuals at his level. You know, when we talk about general service, sort of C-techs, if you will, that would have had him beat. But the man showed up. He was consistent. His message about his willingness, his message about his consistency, that's what sold me, because that is culture. Tear up your business from the inside out, and every man and woman is in there with you. That's what it's about. That's what it's about.
I want to move into a couple of subjects that our listeners are in the surveys have been telling me. They want to know a little bit about how you consider your suppliers and what makes you choose your first call?
You know, I'm sorry to be just brutal, but it sucks, and I'll tell you why. Rotating electric in our industry right now is just in a shame. It's in a shame. I can give you, you know, I don't want to pipe off manufacturers. I can tell you hydraulic parts are a shame. I've seen a huge difference as the rest of our peers in the industry. And, you know, Tony from Brooklyn making pita bread couldn't be the same guy making alternators. We got to do something about that. When it comes to parts, I'm really looking for the Denso's. I'm looking for the OE quality line of parts. We have to prepare. I wish some of these manufacturers would listen to the installer market. And, you know, I'll give you an example. I won't mention the names of a national manufacturer that came in, and they gave us some sort of flush filtering device for the power steering systems.
Yep.
And in my mind, I'm thinking, how about we just manufacture good parts? I mean, this was a filtration system to be put on every car with their product. Why? You know, and we're not talking about cars that have, you know, power steering coolers or anything like that. We're just talking about, let's make a quality product. The installers, let's make sure we're installing these things properly. We're doing the job right from A to Z and not skipping steps. We can't beat up the manufacturers that way. But it's tough. You know, car parts right now is tough. A lot of my stuff's coming from the dealer. That's just you know, the way it is.
Frank, is there anything you think that your primary supplier could do better to give you better service, better programming?
It's not service. You know, service is important. I'm very loyal. They can raise my prices. I'm not a price guy. I think in general, I'll tell you what, I'll play off of what Donald Trump, and I watch this C-SPAN, all right, let's move on a little bit off to the side. It all comes in bundles here.
Let's do it.
Donald Trump announced his presidential running.
Yes, he did.
Some took it as a joke. But something that Donald Trump had mentioned is we're getting our tails handed to us from a manufacturing point. And I thought about this for a minute. And I said to myself, well, you know why? It's because what the American consumer wants is, for the most part, inexpensive. Am I going to pay $40 extra to buy a piece of furniture in Virginia that's made by Bassett, or can I get the same function of that furniture made in China for $15? As a society, we want cheap. Now, in the service industry, that's a tough go. We cannot commoditize this the way a Walmart or the big retail chains are going. So when I go back to pricing and I go back to manufacturing, you know, these manufacturers are not stupid. They've got to keep their costs in line. They've got to be competitive. And so now we're kind of caught in the middle, and it's tough. The consumer at the end, you know, I want to just say one more thing, Carm. I think at the end of the day, depending on the type of repair, and I don't want to switch gears too hard, but I think our shops in our industry can do a much better job in embracing the potential of this procedure to come back. If we look at any other type of repairs, a lot of the folks that I talk to say, oh, I had this angry person come in and we just did a bunch of work, and whether the part failed or whether there were some labor workmanship issues, there should be an embracement of a courtesy recheck. It's the doctor doing a large procedure that says, hey, we're going to do a follow-up x-ray. So now we're reducing the anxiety. So if we have a part failure in this conversation, as we're talking about, we're letting people know up front.
So you mean critical repairs? Are you doing that? Are you asking someone to come back
Absolutely.
In 6 months? Is that we want to make sure this thing works?
Now, oil leak repairs is 7 to 10 days.
Okay.
Right.
What about a rack? What about a rack or power steering?
Absolutely. Any leaker, anything that leaks in our shop that we repair, the procedure is a cross check. So in other words, the technician that didn't work on it is going to do a visual and double check the other technician. This is a cross hood check. And quite frankly, on a busy day, yes, I hear everybody on the podcast now saying, well, Frank, that's a difficult thing to do. The bottom line is where it needs to be done, cross hood check. Listen, we are responsible for major repair procedures. One doctor does not go in and take care of a heart surgery. He's got a whole team.
He's got a team.
That's right. So we do invite folks back. It's a courtesy check while they wait. There's no charge. And all that does is it builds, A, that we really did fix it. If we're going to have a failure, it's going to fail within 7 days, right? I think we can all agree to that. And what we're telling the consumer is, again, we are with you. We are backing. We are accountable. We don't want to wait for surprises. And that's the method.
Any big concern? Any threats to your business right now that you see?
Yeah, not to my business. You know, I wouldn't call them threats. I like to use the word challenges. That's a little bit more diplomatic.
Sure.
Looking at the health indicators, you know, a guy like myself is moving fast and forward, and sometimes fast and forward is probably the worst thing you can do, because I'm very big on year over year and month over month, and like a lot of our listeners, and sometimes we can drive ourselves freaking mad.
Are you looking at your numbers every day, every couple days?
Every day. Every day.
And so
every
day. You've got a team building these numbers for you. They're on your desk in the morning. You look them over. What decisions are you making if you see something out of whack?
Yeah, so technician productivity, technician efficiency is huge, you know, based upon the hours of productivity, based on what the guys are doing in the shop. Excuse me. We try to get a 12-hour a day and an 8-hour man on the job.
Okay.
And so we're looking at hours. And so I'll have a weekly session with the technicians. And we'll talk. I got to be honest with you. In the last year, it's not about efficiency. It's not about efficiencies, because this team that I have here, which took some time to build, that's a whole nother topic. These guys are on autopilot. The topic that we're having is the follow-through to the quality. You have a machine. Your machine is engaging. It's growing. The biggest problem for any machine is the output quality, and that's my biggest concern. When we start to grow at levels, you know, it's the summer months. A lot of our industry in the summer months are running and gunning. Now we're going to have, we're not crying the blues about car count and ticket averages. We're crying the blues about, oh, God, John Doe had too many comebacks. And so the quality is key. And I'll just give you the idea of how these conversations go. It's really not, hey, guys, let's get quality. It's sitting each man down individually first and privately and saying, hey, listen, these are areas that I'd like to see you improve upon. Some of these oil leak repairs, maybe we're not laying an eighth inch of a bead of silicone right on a pan, whatever the case may be. But these are the areas right now. This is the tactic of the business. This is the tactic. This isn't the strategy. These are the minor things that happen in the pit. And so quality is huge. As far as the service counter, the biggest thing is to ensure that we are taking advantage of any missed opportunities. We do create a folder. I do it old school. I do have all the follow-up service programs and the data mining programs, and we send reminders and all that. But I believe that your business is only as good as how much you recover the missed opportunities. What happened to the estimate call? Did we not sell the scheduled appointment? Did we just sell the estimate over the phone? That's a no-no. Most of us know on the podcast. Now, it's not easy. You get an estimate caller, we want to sell the appointment. And there's a way to do that, but it's not easy. And so I'm looking at that file so we can try to recover some of that business that we've lost.
Are you doing this, or have you delegated some of this work, or at least a portion
of this work? I'm a one-man store. I don't have three stores. At one time, I had upwards of 28 people. I had staff. And so a lot of what I do is shared with the service counter. But right now, this is what I do. I'm not tasking anybody. I'm happy with it, and I'm passionate about it. So this is something that I do with the staff, if that answers your question.
Is it reinvention of everything that you stand for on a daily basis?
Give me an example.
Well, you find that there's a problem, and your current processes and systems didn't seem to catch it. So we have to go back and rethink about what we were doing?
No. I have about a 38-page process and procedures booklet. Okay, this was back in the R.L. O'Connor days. We developed this booklet. We add to it. So there are procedures. Now, as of late, I have not had to whip out the book and go back to the letter of the law. Okay, and that's awesome. It hasn't always been that way. The fact is that as long as every individual in an organization is moving along within that culture and in that process and they're executing, my job isn't to sit out here and micromanage. I'm going to look at the macro of things, which is really important. I'm going to look at my community. I'm going to look at my marketability. And then I'm going to look at doing the fun things, that are like over the top for me, and that's getting out and be passionate about our industry.
Let's talk about some of that right now. But let me lead that off with the fact that when I started to follow you on Twitter, which I do for all of my guests to get a feel and a flavor for what we're about ready to go into for an interview, You're on fire. It's the only thing I could describe, you know, when they were coming at me fast and furious. And the engagement, not only of the things that are going on in your shop, but the world around you. And I didn't follow you on Facebook yet, but Twitter seemed to have been your preferred method of getting out there. Is that right?
Absolutely. I think it's an amazing opportunity. I think part of the entrepreneurial spirit, we always talk about, well, we're going to go to a leads group or we're going to sit down and sort of find out what the community needs. I talk to a lot of folks in our industry, and Twitter is just not on the page, and they just don't understand the opportunity for them as individuals to market themselves as an expert. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not suggesting Twitter is going to help you bring customers in on day one. But what are we doing here? We're building a business in the community.
Right.
If you're not out with a bullhorn, passioning your peddling and peddling your passion behind, I fix cars really well and I love the people I deal with, Twitter is an opportunity for that. And you can educate. You can work. I got to tell you, I've had so much. I could go on and on. I mean,
yeah,
Twitter has just been amazing.
That's what I found, Frank, from you is you have to have as much digital connection as you have personal. And that's just my feel for how the world is today. I don't know, agree or disagree to that.
I'm going to agree with it big time. And I have one word. It's called millennial.
That's where I was kind of going because, you know, we all have to stand the risk that us boomers are going to, that we'll be long-term customers, maybe not change as much, but the millennials have choice and they have yet to discover where do I hang my hat on a professional automotive repair shop. And it's easy for them to go to their phone and find somebody within 2 miles to get my oil change if they haven't been engaged in, you know, you almost got to get them before they start to go.
Well, another thing I would add, analytics out there that suggest that, you know, traditionally content is king, right? Content is king. However we vlog or blog. But if you want to be the king, it needs to be socially relevant.
And this is where social media comes into play, so that you're actually not only communicating with your neighbors, you're communicating with other industry types. You're communicating with the world as you see it in a neighborly way. And so part of neighborly, what we forget on social media, and I talk to a lot of people, is we're sort of spinning this bullet point of come see me, I fix cars really well, and that's not engaging. We need to have a conversation. That is the key, a conversation. Now, I've seen a lot of shops, and I'm trying to figure names out. This is not coming to me, but I'd say there's a handful of shops nationally that are doing it really well, and they're having a conversation.
If you walked into a shop that was really struggling, and I know you're a customer service advocate and proponent, and you know that it's all about the customer. I think your world revolves around the customer. What's like one or two things that you would say to a shop owner to break out of mediocrity customer service and go for the gusto?
We need to stop talking to the customer and talking with the customer. I think the biggest challenges that a lot of us have is, and I've been talking to service advisors, whether they're in my camp or just nationally, what we tend to do is serve it up as sort of, here's your food, this is how you must eat it, what do you want to do? That doesn't work. We need to identify the personality. We need to identify the need. We need to identify what's in that head. And that's, you know, that's the indifference. Hey, we all know indifference. Hey, I'm not going to talk down to somebody. But that's not good enough. That's not good enough. We all know not to talk down to people.
Yeah.
What is rock solid is side by side identifying the need. Identifying the need, get to know this individual.
You know, I was listening to you, and I'm a physical person when it comes to trying to break a habit. And what I was thinking of is if when you say talk with them, not to them, move around the counter and go out front, like you just said, be kind of on the same side so there's no barrier, and have their conversation, not yours.
Absolutely, and understand that this can take place in the physical face-to-face. But guess what? There are nuances of the reception area and sort of having tablet inspections,
right?
Sort of running around with a tablet. You know, now we're going from technology that's helping us to actually getting that much closer to where people want. And we talked about millennials. Millennials are bright, they're smart, they're intelligent. We're not knocking any other generation. Those folks get it. They get it, and they are going to be scrutinizing everything. So, for example, I've heard shops say, well, we ask all of our Yelpers for a review. That's not the way to do it. Do your show, do your performance, and let it take its course in a natural, organic fashion.
What do you mean by do your show? What do you mean?
Your show, your performance, your service experience. People aren't coming to you to just fix your car. There's a concierge level of who you are in the community.
I see.
Concierge says, you know what? If I have someone coming in, they see me as their expert with their car. Well, when they see me or my company as an expert with their car, they're going to look at me as an expert for everything else. Hey, how do I get here? What do you know about this? You know, we have to understand as an industry, it is not. I think fixing cars is last. We are a concierge for our community.
I have a good friend, and she works for a doctor that does concierge service in Florida, and people pay X amount of money a year to have total access to the doctor. You know, who knows? Maybe that's where the reinvention of the industry may go someday. It was just yesterday that, you know, I'm on your Twitter feed, and I saw you talk about Periscope, so I decided to download Periscope because I was sitting here on the sidelines not knowing. I was very curious, and then all of a sudden my phone went off with this really loud little tweet, 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 and I'm saying, what the heck is that? I mean, it's a brand new sound. I did a search, and I found out that you are just getting ready to broadcast a Periscope, and I said, okay, I've got to find these few minutes, figure out what it's about. You walked us through your shop. I'm watching this thing live, and it's a Twitter company, Periscope. And I'm watching you live walk around your shop, telling the people that were following you the safety of tires. You took them to the alignment rack. You stopped and interviewed a tech who was doing some work. And then I started to say, now, why does Frank think this is important. Where's this going? And I put myself in the shoes of a follower, or I put myself in the shoes of a potential customer or a current customer, a loyal customer. I'm saying, this guy's a giver. And even though it was fun, I got something from it that said, Frank continues to show me why I go to his shop and why I'm so loyal. Now, is that what you expected me to get from that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I will tell you that me personally, I'm just a maniac performer, and I do apologize for saying that. Again, if I was basket weaving this day, I would just basket weave and peddle that passion. I happen to be in the automotive industry, and this is what I love, and this is what I like to do. If the technology is there for me to be able to get a message, and that message is, hey, let me take you behind the scenes. Let's get into the car life. Let's get into the car culture. This is why you need to do a block test before you start spending money on the cause of an overheat that effectively could be a blown motor. You know, these things people need to know. And if you've got a community, right, let's get out of social media. Let's get out of technology. Wouldn't we be doing this anyway from the steps of our brick and mortar? Wouldn't we be out there helping Miss Jones on our parking lot saying the same thing? This technology exists to broadly give out a message, your brand. I happen to just love getting out there and sharing it out and building a brand and building a community. To me, it's I love it.
Continues to pay dividends for you?
Absolutely. You know, it's not so much the dividends that I may see from the hard work earned in repeat business. That's our cherry, right?
Yeah.
That repeat business we've worked for. This whole thing about social media is a great supplement. And yes, I have had returns. When this adds up to the advertisement that I've got a display ad, or perhaps I'm doing a weekend show on a local news station, all these things kind of add up and they connect. And so earlier in this conversation, many years ago, when I discounted a brand and said, hey, I'm not Coca-Cola, well, you know what? Branding can be done. The technology is there. So if you own a shop, brand your business. Use the technologies that's out there. And I would invite anybody to reach out to me. I'm more than happy and willing to take the time and help folks out that are out there that may be struggling with that.
How do people get through to you?
You can direct message me on Twitter at URMechanic or Frank at DesertCarCare.com. Or I don't know if you've got a script, some content that you're writing after this, Carm. I'm more than happy to give my shop phone number.
I am.
Okay. If I can give that now, I'm more than happy to do that. Or if you want to include it in the content.
I'll just include it in the content. Okay.
I figured that would be appropriate. Absolutely.
Yeah. So a couple of other really questions down in dirties here about technician training. You've got a great team there. What's your disciplines around training for them and keeping them current?
We try to attain 40 hours a year. And at all levels, you know, Worldpac right now has some of the best training in the industry as a part of some of the national parts houses that we belong to. There are, I'd call them mid-level training. My guys are responsible. We put up a calendar. It goes on the door. You know, I have a little quote board, and under the quote board is the calendar for the year with training. Sometimes we have 4 weeks, 6 weeks out. We put those up. So 40 hours a year. And the one thing that I have to say in regards to training, it's not just 40 hours. It's a daily routine. It's a daily routine. And nothing with these guys in my back shop has anything to do with rushing through something and letting that repair go. That is not done. It is fixed here. And so there's some pain. There's that 430 pain where we have to execute a rental because maybe one of my younger technicians goofed up. But in my eyes and in my world, I tell him every time that there's something like that, you didn't goof up. Your honesty is integrity, and that's courage, and that's how we get through these things. And I know that sounds cliche and maybe tongue-in-cheek, but that makes the world of difference to the culture that you have in your business, especially with these youngsters. Carm, listen, I talk to a lot of shop owners, and they complain heavily. Not so much about turnover, that's always there. It can be. It can be a problem. But younger technicians, I can't find younger techs. Well, forget about it. You're not going to find them more so that you will groom them.
Right.
And it's not rocket science. I know a lot of our guys and gals in the industry are doing that. It's what I've done with my company. It sometimes is very painful. It is a big investment for us as entrepreneurs, but that is the way to go.
Do you pay for the class or and their time to go?
Absolutely. Absolutely. 100%. The ASE tests that they take, they're reimbursed. We're going, you know, as far as fringe benefits, let's just talk about that. You know, we're getting ready to do their supplemental insurance. I have someone on my staff right now that can't afford this new national health care plan. We're just going to pay the difference. We're going to make sure all of our people are set up. You know, anything that I can do for this is my family out here. You know, this past weekend, we have a cabin up north. My wife and I and my family, we bring our team up to the cabin. We go out pontoon. Everything we do, we work hard and play hard together. When somebody has the pain going on out there, we stop the world. We get in and help somebody with their pain. That's a family unit. That's a team. That's culture.
Excellent. Frank, out of all the community programs that you've done, what's the best program you've been with?
By far, the best thing that we do on a yearly basis is we have our free All Changes for our teachers. My heart is so close. I had an opportunity given to me as a youngster, and I had a music teacher that helped me. And teachers are our unsung heroes. So we do about 300 free All Changes. We have a Saturday event. It's turned into a community event, and we're growing it every year by far. I mean, we just have fun with everything, but by far, that is really dear to my heart.
How does teachers, it work? Give me the mechanics. Yeah. It. What do you do?
So what happens is we, on the day of, you know, again, this turns into a media Lollapalooza, which is awesome, right? It's great for business. That's sure. Great branding. But on the day of, 80 to 100 All Changes is what we'll do, and that's all we're doing. We take a Saturday, which we're normally closed upon. And any cars or teachers, and they travel. It's amazing. People will travel, right? Okay. I think it's just the camaraderie. I think it's getting together with other teachers. We voucher this out all the way through October. Yeah, I don't want to turn anybody away. And it works out to be roughly 300 All Changes. And to slow it down and keep it organized, those folks that we couldn't do that day, they get the voucher. They're instructed to give us a call. They set up an appointment, and we do their All Change, and it's free. And it's
cool.
A great way. It is a great way. And, you know, it's cool beans. You know, it's all over the internet. It's really cool. And I want to keep growing it. You know, I'm trying to grow the businesses in my community to get involved and, you know, sort of cross-promotion this thing. And love it.
Well, we're winding down. So a couple of last questions. Where do you see the industry in the next 3 to 5 years?
I hate to say it. I hate the word consolidation. It's happened in many, many other industries. I talk to a lot of multi-store outlets, the MSOs.
Yep.
And study after study, statistics show, and I don't have an answer for this, but studies show that the consumer is a lot more comfortable doing business with a multi-store. Now, I don't have an answer. Yes, sir. That statistic is out there. And so what I'm saying is that
they think it's bigger, more secure?
It's like anything else. Am I going to go to the local hardware store, Joe's Hardware? Am I going to go to, you know, Home Depot? Or am I going to go to – it's sort of the branding. This message of perception, this
big
perception.
Is better.
Right. So those studies are out there. Now, you and I, the local guys, the rock stars in our community, we're not buying that. And we're proving it every day. But when I mention consolidation, and again, I'm not knocking multi-stores. Hey, I was a multi-store and I may grow more stores in the future. I'm not knocking it, but I'm just saying that there is a sense right now that we're starting to see the potential for consolidation.
Out of all the podcasts we've done so far, that's the first time that's come up, and I think you're a large thinker when it comes to that. Now, my final question, and you've probably said this over and over again we've been on for quite a while, so this may have to be a two-parter. Give us Frank Butkus Lloyd's words to live by.
Success is never final. Failure is never fatal. It is the courage that counts. That stays with me every day. And number two, the dream is free, but the hustle, that's sold separately. So you guys need to hustle, period.
Plain, simple, to the point. Frank, I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed. This has been a a riot, a lot of fun. If I could describe one thing about you, I think there's an awful lot of passion just bubbling from the surface in everything that you do. And that's why I think you have such incredible, remarkable results. Thank you for being on.
Carm, my pleasure. I look forward to chapter two. I'll bring the couch and we shall lounge in this wonderful industry, our automotive, beloved automotive industry. Thank you so much.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from another inspiring aftermarket professional. Until next time.